Today is Wednesday, December 21st, Chaf Hei Kislev, first day of Hanukkah. This is the women's Chumash here, but we are doing Chumash, but in Yoni Hanukkah.
Hey, Rabotai. This is the Chumash here. Today is Hanukkah. Today we're going to do Chumash Hanukkah. Okay? Please open up just today, because that's what you're supposed to do. The Gemara in Megillah tells you whenever there is a Yom Tov, special day, you're supposed to cancel your regular learning and focus on Inyani Diyoma. So we are going to focus on Bamidbar chapter 7 and chapter 8. Which chapter 7 is the Kriyat HaTorah for the Yom Tov of Hanukkah. Chapter 7 and chapter 8 of Sefer Bamidbar, and then see a critical Ramban in chapter 8. Okay. The rule of Pinky is that whenever there is a Torah text assigned to be read in shul, there has got to be something in that text that enlightens us about either one of two things. The historical background to the events that may have taken place, or the halachot that govern that particular day. One of two things. So take, for example, when we read Vayikra chapter 23. Open up to Vayikra chapter 23 for a second. We're going to be flying around. Vayikra 23. This is the parsha that I told you have to know by heart. It's the parsha of the Moadot. Vayikra 23. We read this the first day of Sukkot, the second day of Sukkot, second day of Pesach. The Mishnah says you read it, Rosh Hashanah as well. We don't, but the Mishnah says you do. There you have a presentation of all of the holidays of the year. And basically it tells you not to do milacha. It tells you on a particular chag, on a Rosh Hashanah it'll say, doesn't say Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the seventh month, you sound the shofar. On the 15th day of the seventh month, you sit in the sukkah, you take a lulav. So it's appropriate to read these texts on Sukkot, because you're going to read about the holiday of Sukkot. It's appropriate to read this on Pesach, because it'll make reference to the Yontov of Pesach. Certain times we don't read halachot describing the sanctity of the day, but we read the historical narrative of what happened. The historical narrative of what happened. So if you will open up for a second, I'll get them sending around, to the beginning of Parshat Bishalach. Bishalach, which is the end of chapter 13 of Sefer Shemot. It's almost at the beginning of chapter 14. It's Parshat Bishalach. So it's the end of chapter 13, beginning of 14, beginning of Bishalach. It's a couple of psukim into Parak 14, if I'm not mistaken.
He's going to the back. It's 21. There you go, right here. Bishalach, just at the end of the parsha. 374. Yeah, 374. So it's chapter 13. By he bishalach paro ta'am. And then in Revi is the Shira. When would you read this? On Pesach. On Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach.
When the event took place. So we don't read about the holiday on the seventh day of Pesach. We read about the historical narrative, what happened. Look at the end of Parshat Bishalach, the end, which is the end of chapter 17 of Sefer Shemot. So it starts at Shvi'i. Vayavo Amalek. Is it not Shvi'i? Vayavo Amalek. Vayilachem in Yisrael birit fidim. When do we read that? On Purim. Exactly. The end of Parshat Bishalach. Because Purim obviously can't have a text which describes the historical narrative. It can't have a text that describes the holiday. So we look for a theme that relates to it. We know that Haman is the a descendant of Agag. Haman ben Ha'agagi. Agag was Melech Amalek. So it's appropriate to read about where Mr. Haman got started. Where did this get started that somebody attacks Am Yisrael? Good. In light of that, we now have to seek something in the Chumash that would be appropriate to read on Chanukah. Obviously, there's no historical narrative. There are no psukim in the Torah that describe the Yom Tov because it didn't exist. So what did Chazal select by Midbar chapter 7? What? No, they did not. They did not. That would have been a good selection. They did not. They selected Chanukat HaMishkan in chapter 7 of Sefer Bamidbar. Nasa, it's the end of Nasa. Perek Zion is the longest chapter in the Chumash. And basically, after describing the background, the Mishkan is finished by He beyond Kalot Moshe LaHakim et HaMishkan. Then, going forward, each Nasi dedicated the Mizbeach by offering the identical set of Korbanot. The identical set of Korbanot. So this Shabbat, when we will read Parshat Miketz and the Maftir of Chanukah, we will read Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'll read Bayom HaRavi'i. So what will we read this coming Shabbat for the Maftir? We read, which is Pasuk Lamed of chapter 7. Bayot Nasi Libnei Reuven Elitzur Ben Shteyur, and the Korban is repeated 12 times. Exact, each day it lists. The Korban is Kara Kesef Achat Shlosh, one silver bowl weighing 130 silver pieces, and so on until you bring, it tells you all the Korban. Repeats it 12 times. Now, there are 12 Nisiim, 12 days. Chanukah is not 12 days. Why would they select this to be read on Chanukah? The fact that they dedicated the Mishkan, an event that took place one time in history, why did they decide to read this on the Yom Tov of Chanukah? Says the Baha'i, he's the only one who does it. The Baal Halachot Gedolot, who is one of the earliest codifiers of Jewish law. No one agreed with him, but the Baha'i said, every time that the Mishkan, that the Mikdash is destroyed, and you have to rededicate it, you follow the procedure in Bamidbar chapter 7. Every time that the Mishkan is destroyed, the Beit HaMikdash, or the Mishkan is destroyed, and it's rededicated, you do exactly what they did in Parshat Nasa. Everyone else believes that Parshat Nasa, chapter 7, was only Lisha'a. What do I mean, Lisha'a? It's only for that time. It has no relevance going forward. The Torah is merely reporting what happened to Am Yisrael at the time of the dedication of the Mishkan. If that would be correct, reading this on Chanukah would make no sense whatsoever. It's a nice story, I'm not saying it's not nice, but what connection does it have to Chanukah? Nothing.
But Chanukah was also the time veil.
What?
It had an end to it.
No, but that's what the Baha'i says. Every time that there is a Chanukah HaMizbeach, you have to do this. You have every day there has to be a korban brought by 12 different people. So when the Chashmonaim come into the Mikdash, find it in a state of ruin and destruction, not only do they want rekindle the menorah miraculously with that one cruse of oil, but what else do? They repair the Mizbeah, and then, says the Baha'i, they are going to read every single activity that is described here. They will go through the dedication process 12 days. So therefore, it is appropriate that this be selected for the Torah reading of Hanukkah. Why? Because this is, if the Bahag was right, we don't have any evidence, this is what they followed. And according to the Bahag, when we build the third Beit HaMikdash, B'mehra B'yameinu, this is what's going to happen. 12 consecutive days, they will offer the identical korban to sanctify the Mizbeach. So Bamidbar chapter 7 is selected by the Mishnah as the Torah text reading for Hanukkah, and it makes sense based on the Bahag's opinion that the description here of dedication of the Mizbeach was not a unique feature that took place at the Mishkan, but will be repeated, has been repeated, will be repeated every time that there is a dedication of the Mikdash. So it happened, according to him, at the time of the Chashmonaim, and will happen again, Le'atid Lavo. That's point number one. Now, we're going to see a Ramban. Go to chapter 8 for a minute. Chapter 8 of Bamidbar. Now, even though the Mishnah does not say this, the minhag of Klal Yisrael is on the last day of Hanukkah, which will be a week from today, in addition to reading the 12th and final Nasi, the custom is, it's not mandated by the Mishnah, but it's the minhag, that you read the first four psukim of Parshat Bahalotcha. That's the minhag. And we're going to see how the Ramban is going to connect these four psukim to Hanukkah. The Ramban's going to do it for us. We don't have to do it. Yes?
Did every member of each of the tribes do bring...
Yes, that's what he claims. Yes.
So it's done just the same?
That's correct. And when Eliyui, the Navi, the Elijah, the prophet, comes, who will either precede or follow them, the arrival of the Messianic, he will identify what tribe you belong to, what tribe I belong to. Everyone will be told who you are a descendant of, and we once again restore the glory of Yud Bet Shneimasar Shvatim, the 12 tribes. So claims the Gemara. Eliyahu is the one who resolves all unknowns, is Eliyahu. Anyhow, so we find here chapter 8 that God tells Aharon to light the menorah. That's what it says. Daber el Aharon ba'amarta elav beha'alotcha et ha'nerot el mul pnei ha'menorah ya'iru shivat ha'nerot. The question which Rashi will ask is, don't look at Rashi. Do not. You don't have Rashi. Maybe you do have. Don't look at Rashi. I want you to open up the text and you tell me what Rashi's question is going to be. Open up to Shmot. I'm going to show you two locations. Shmot, the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh. So that is found. I'll give you the exact parak in a second. Exact parak in a second. It's also at the end of the parak. The next parak starts like four subdivisions into the Parsha. It is Shmot. It is Shmot. Shmot, Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav. Chav Zayin, Chav. That's one source that you have to look at. Chav Zayin, Chav. And Vayikra chapter 24. Vayikra chapter 24. Once you see those two sources, Vayikra chapter 24 and Shmot 27 verse 20, you now have to ask Rashi's question. You are Rashi. You're just as capable of Rashi as asking Rashi's question. The only difference is that Rashi knew the whole Torah, so that's why he asked it without having it in front of him.
Can you repeat the numbers?
Yes. Vayikra 24, the beginning, and Shmot 27 verse 20. So what topic is recorded in both of them? The light of the menorah. Right? The Atat and Sabet and Israel. What you? Lahalot Ner Tamid. To light the menorah. So now, in chapter 8 of Bamidbar, now we come back to us,
What is the Torah saying? So what is Rashi's question going to be? Why do I have to repeat it again? It has already been told to him in Shmot. Parshat Tetzaveh. That's where they put, that's the command to build a Mishkan. That was the appropriate place. In Vayikra, it's repeated again. You're going to have to ask why it was repeated in Vayikra 24. That's not my job today. But Rashi and the Ramban and everyone else will ask, why is it repeated in Vayikra chapter 24? Our challenge is, why is it repeated in chapter 8 of Bamidbar?
There is also
correct, but there it was, if the Torah is given to Moshe, here he's telling Aaron, come forth. We know it's Aaron, because in Parshas Tetzaveh it already says that's the Parsha of the Big Day Kahuna. We know it's the Aaron. So now let's read Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi asks the question, now you have your sheet. So on the top left hand of the page, you have Rashi. Saha'alotcha, Rashi asks, very famous question. What does this have to do with the price of tea in China? That's Rashi's question. Lama nismicha parshat haminorah leparshat hanisiyah. Why is this chapter of lighting the menorah recorded after the dedication of the mizbeach? It's already been recorded twice. I showed it to you. Now Rashi knew that. That's why he's asking. Why put it again here if it's already written in two other locations in their proper sequence? Answers Rashi. Lefi shekishara'a Aharon chanukat hanasiim. When Aaron witnessed the dedication of the Mizbeah,
choshadato, he felt badly.
Shelo haya imahem bechanukah, lohu velo shifto. He felt badly that neither he nor his tribe, Shevet Levi, did not participate in the dedication of the Mizbeach. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nothing to worry about. Chayecha, your life, gidola mishelohev. Your tasks are much greater. She'ata madlit umeitiv et haneirot. You will light the menorah every single day. So don't feel badly that you didn't participate in the dedication of the Mizbeah.
There's a what kind of thing we said.
What?
There's a what kind of thing.
Ah, that's what the Ramban is going to say. Hold on 1 second. Hold on.
Until the next.
So Rashi, this is Rashi says. The Ramban is going to ask the following question on Rashi. We'll see it inside. He won't use the example that I will give. Okay? Winter break is coming up. You have two children. One, you're taking to Israel for a trip. And the other one asks you, where am I going? Oh, when I come back, we're going to go to a movie. Oh, nice. How does that serve as a consolation prize for not going to Israel? Aaron wanted to dedicate the Mizbeach. And you tell him, oh, don't worry, you're going to light the menorah. The Ramban will now ask, let's read it inside. If you're looking to award consolation prizes, I could have thought of 20,000 things better than lighting the menorah. Let's read it inside. Ramban on the right hand side. Ba'alotcha. As Ramban always does, or many times, he starts giving respect. He quotes Rashi. Lama nismecha parshat haminorah lechanukat hanasiim. Line 5, Lashon Rashi, Midrash Agada. Rashi, take it straight out of the Medrash. I pounded that into your heads. Rashi is not a Pashtun. He quotes Medrash. Says the Rambam. V'lo nitbarer li lama nichamo b'hadlakat hanerot. Why did God console Aharon with the kindling of the menorah? V'lo nichamo b'ktoret boker ba'erev. Why did he tell him, hey Aaron, you're going to offer the incense every morning and every night? And the incense received
special praise by God Himself. As it states, Yasi Shishibcho Bo HaKadosh. Maza Shevach. Praise. Kitoret was praised. As it states in Parshat Zot HaBracha, we read it on Sivu Sarah 80 times. Yasimu Kitorah Va'apecha. What do? We offer Kitoret. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nose to shmack. Shmack, shmack. Let him smell our Kitoret. That's a description of what we do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't say we light menorah. We offer Ketoret. Plus, in addition about Ketoret, tell you something else which is related to us. Does anybody know how the activities in the Mishkan, were in the Mikdash, were assigned? Which Kohen does what activity? What? There was a lottery. There used to be a practice, the Mishnah tells us this, whoever got there first gets to do it. Now there's enormous incentive to getting there first. Because if you want to eat a roast beef sandwich, you're a Kohen, you don't have land. You probably don't have cattle, because you don't have any land for them to graze. So if you want a roast beef sandwich, you come to the Mizbeach, you offer your Korban Shlamim, the Kohen who sacrifices gets to keep a portion of the meat. Says the Mishnah, I'm not making this up, one day two Kohanim got there at the same time and they had a fight with one another. And he pushed one guy off the Mizbeah and he broke his leg. Chachamim were a little upset, but they didn't do anything about it. A couple of weeks later, same thing happened. He pushed him off the Mizbeah and he was killed. They decided, it's recorded in the Mishnah, that from now on everything's going to be done by lottery. By lottery. So here is what happens. Okay? Let's assume it's time to sacrifice the morning sacrifice, the daily sacrifice. Okay? We pick every 2 weeks they rotated families. Every 2 weeks. Every Kohen only got 2 weeks assigned to the Mikdash. 2 weeks. And the holidays. Holidays and 2 weeks a year. The rest of the time you were teachers. Fine, your name came out. I'm sacrificing the Korban Tamid Shel Shachar today. Very nice. After I'm finished, my name goes back into the hat. Tomorrow, I could be very lucky and be pulled out again. But if you were elected by the lottery to do Ketoret, your name never went back into the lottery for the rest of your life. Why? Because there was a promise, quoted in the Medrash, not in the text, that if you offer Ketoret, you're going to become a millionaire. You are promised Ashirut, Osher, for offering Ketoret. That's why in the Sephardic community, they know the Ketoret by heart. Peter Maktoris, they rattle, they know it by heart, because they believe this Midrash. It is recorded in Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazic Jews as well, about being a Sandik at a Bris. There is one source that equates the person who holds the baby at a bris, compares him to the Kohen offering Ketoret. Says the Ramah, our Ashkenazic decisor, once you are honored any time in your life of being a Sander, you should never accept it again. Never accept it again. Because if you won the lottery once, you shouldn't be entitled to win the lottery a second time. The Shach, who we actually follow, qualifies, it means within one family. The Ramah said once in your life. Our practices, you can do it multiple times, but only within one family. So if you have, somebody has children, and now your children had grandchildren, in the same family, you will never be a Sandik, should never be a Sandik, for two of your grandchildren of the same family. Not allowed to. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Why? Ketoret was the lottery. Ketoret was the lottery. Here are my tickets from last night and tonight. Was 100? Anybody win last night? 152 million? Nobody. Okay. Well,
that's why no one.
That's
here.
Good. Okay, but I also have tonight's Powerball, which is 104 million. I'll take that also. I didn't need 152. I told HaKadosh Baruch Hu this morning. 104 is just fine. Just fine.
Do you use the same number, Felish?
No, I laugh at Baruch Hu. That's Ramosha's idea.
You're not supposed to buy more than one.
Ramosha Feinstein, in New York, you get two chances for a dollar. You get two set of numbers. Ramosha Feinstein said you should play both set of numbers, the same numbers, on the same ticket. Somebody asked him why. So he said as follows. And we would all play two different numbers to increase our chances, two different sets of numbers. He said, no. You're never going to win based on natural things. If anything you're going to win, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants those numbers to be picked. If you have two of the same, if there are multiple winners, you get two shares. Two shares. That's what Ramayisha said. Yeah, right? Sure. It's one of his famous tshuvas. Played two sets of numbers. You didn't know that, right? Didn't know that. Not the lottery. Good. So now, Ketoret asks the Rambam, you want to offer Aaron a consolation prize? Tell him you can offer the Ketoret. Why the menorah? Furthermore, says the Rambam, let's continue. We are on line 8. What happened right here, right after the parentheses, Gevarim Lamedet? What happens to Kol HaKarbanot Ubeminchat Chavitin? What happened to all of the sacrifices that Aharon brought on the day in which the Mishkan opened up himself? The Kohen, we're going to read it in Vayikra chapter 8, Parshat Shmini. Vayhi Bayom HaShmini. It was the eighth day of the dedication. Kara Moshe Aharon Ulevanav and said, you're the Kohen Gadol, you Aharon have to offer certain Karmanot. So he was going to bring Karmanot. Why didn't God just tell him, Aaron, what are you getting all upset about? On the eighth day, you are going to what? Bring your own set of Karmanot. What else? Uba'avodas Yom HaKippurim She'enak She'ra Elabo. Why didn't God tell Aharon, hey Aharon, you know what you have? You have the worship on Yom Kippur, which can only be done by you. No other Kohen is eligible. V'nichnas Lifnayu Lifnim. Where does the Kohen Gadol go on Yom Kippur? Kachia Kadash. No other human being has that privilege. That would have been a heck of a consolation prize. To walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Ushahu Kadosh Hashem Omeid Beheichalo Lishorto Ulevarech Bishmo? Why? What's going on? Therefore, says the Ramban, I'm skipping a couple of lines. It is now, there is a dot next to the word aval. Next to the word aval. Everybody have it? Aval. Le'inyin ha-hagada hazu, lidrosh, the purpose of this midrash, lidrosh, to infer, remez min ha-parsha, al chanukah shel neirot, shahaita bebayit sheni, Al yidei Aharon ubanav. Ritzoni lomar chashmonai kohen gadol ubanav. Says the Rambam. I'll tell you what the Nechama is. And here's what Nechama said. The institution that was used as the medium of dedication by the Nesiim was the institution of the sacrifice. How many years of Jewish history have we had a sacrifice? Not many. 40 years of travel in the desert. A couple of hundred years when they were, you know, conquering Israel until they built the Beit HaMikdash. 410 years of the Beit HaMikdash. 420 years of the second Beit HaMikdash. And that's it. We have not had a Korban in nearly 2,000 years in Klal Yisrael of survivors. But you, Aharon, you're going to dedicate the Mikdash with a medium that's going to be permanent. What medium is he asking him to dedicate the Mikdash with? Lighting the menorah. But lighting the menorah is not going to stop when the Beit HaMikdash comes to a grinding halt. Where is it going to be perpetuated? By our lighting the menorah
8 days of Hanukkah.
That's nice.
Says the Ramban. Not my words. Says the Ramban. I'm reading it again. We're from that period. Aval inyan ha-hagadah hazu lidrosh remez min ha-parsha al Chanukah shel neirot shahaita bebayit sheni al yidei Aharon ubanav ritzoni lomar chashmonoi kohen gadol. So what God is saying is, Aaron, don't be so upset. You're using something that will be repeated and repeated and repeated. Lidor dorot, even in the absence of a Beit HaMikdash. Candle lighting will be extended. And that's the Nechama, claims the Ramban, that was awarded to Aaron. Based on the fact that the medium used by the other Nisiyim was a temporary feature of Klal Yisrael, the medium used by Aaron the Kohen is a medium that will continue to move on way beyond the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash.
He's implying, though, that the Torah is built into the Torah, this Chag, or any other Chagim as well, that either are not.
That's correct. That's a remnant.
That's a remnant
to a Chag that is not Minat Torah.
Put it in
the
right box.
That's correct. So therefore, says the Ramban, yes, Aharon was told about this mitzvah in Shemot chapter 27. He was reminded in Vayikra chapter 24. But now I'm going to describe the what? The dedication of the Mizbeach in Bamidbar chapter 7. Aharon came. Now I'm going to record it again to let you know that Aharon felt badly, came forward and protested, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, nothing to worry about. You have the menorah. In light of this, I want to share with you chidush fantastic, which the Rav once said. Those of you who came to the Mishnah Shir years ago, you've heard this. When I did this on Yom Hanukkah, take the back sheet. It's going to shock you. Please hold on. Put your seatbelt on because this is going to be shocking. I have on the bottom of the page in the Gemara bracketed the only Tanaitic source that discusses Hanukkah. Only Tanaitic source. There are Gemaras that talk about Hanukkah, Braitha, with no mission. There's only one mission, and that is lifted from a book called Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is a book that had dozens of days during the course of the year that you're not allowed to fast. Because something happened. Usually something around the Mikdash happened. Only 2 days in our calendar remain of those days. Purim and Hanukkah. That's it. And it's a list of days we now have to fast, and you now have to give a hesped, a eulogy. So we're going to read the Gemara. This is the basis of that famous story that your kids learn in the nursery school. My Hanukkah. What exactly is Hanukkah? The Tanu Rabbanu, we have learned in a bracha. Bechafhei b'Kislev, Yomei b'Chanukah. 25th day of the month of Kislev, today are the 8 days of Chanukah. T'manya inun, these 8 days, d'lo l'mispad b'hon, u'd'lo l'hit anot b'hon. You're not permitted to eulogize, and you're not permitted to fast. And in certain communities, they take those words seriously, not to eulogize. If you're a member of the Broya Kehillah, somebody passes away during Hanukkah, the Levaya is 20 seconds. The rabbi, whether it was Rabbi Geli or whoever he is now, he used to be Rabbi Schwab or Rabbi Broya, will read one parak of Tehillim, and that's it. End of Levaya. So if 2,000 people can come, nobody said a word of a hesed. As it says, "Delo lemispad v'hom." American rabbanim know that they will be fired if they don't say anything appropriate. So you say, "You know, you're not going to say a hesed, but I'm going to say a poverer, right? Poverer." But in Broyers, they weren't worried about getting fired, so he could follow the halacha meticulous. Nobody was going to fire a Broyer. Why are these 8 days? Says the bride. The story that you all know.
Shikishinichnus Yavanim Lahechal Tim'u Kol Hashmanim. The Yavanim, the Greeks, entered the Mikdash. They defiled all the oils Shebehechal in the Mikdash. Ukishi Gavra Malchut Beit Hashmanai Vinitzchum. When the Hasmonean Empire prevailed and defeated them, Badku, they searched, V'lo Matzu, L'pachachat Shal Shemen, Shehai Amunach L'chotamo Shal Kohen Gadol. They only found one cruse of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. V'lo Haya Bo La'elo L'hadlik Yom Echad. There was only enough oil to last one day. Na'aseh Bo'neis V'hadliku Mimeno Shmoni Amin. A miracle occurred, and the cruise lasted for 8 days. Now comes the critical words, Rabbanan. Lishana acheret. Next year, they established this holiday. These 8 days to commemorate what happened. Kov'um v'asum yomim tovim b'halel v'hoda'ah. They established these 8 days as yomim tovim, to be observed with Hallel and Hoda'ah. Take a look at Rashi. I bracketed the Rashi on the left-hand side. Tell me what Rashi says, what you're supposed to do on Hanukkah to express Hallel and Hoda'ah. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Lo she'asurin b'melacha. The Brayta calls them a Yom Tov. So if it's a Yom Tov, what could have I thought? Now I'll turn on the lights. Says Rashi, no, that's not what it meant here. It's called a Yom Tov, but not that it's Asurim b'Melacha. Ela, Shelo Nikba'u, they were only established to do what? Ela, Likrot, Hallel, to read the Hallel. Everybody said Hallel this morning. V'lomar Al Hanisim b'Hoda'ah. And to say Al Hanisim in Hoda'ah. What's Hoda'ah? In benching, no Melacha, or in Modim. End of it. That's it. What's conspicuously absent from the only brayta in the Shas, in all of Shas that talks about Hanukkah? How about lighting the menorah? Nothing about lighting the menorah. So the Rav speculated, and he has halachic sources to prove it, that the episode of Hanukkah took place in the year 165 BCE. The second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era. So for 235 years, the Mikdash was still standing post-Hasmonean revolt. The Hasmonean. The menorah was being lit in the Beit HaMikdash every single day of the year. So there was no mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot for the first 235 years of Hanukkah. All you did was say Hallel and say Al HaNisim.
Because
it was lit in the temple. After the second destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, they instituted Hadlakat Neirot, not to commemorate the cruise of oil, Anna. Remember the fact that they lit the menorah in the Mikdash. Just like the Ramban said, that what will now perpetuate the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot in the Beit HaMikdash, what will it be? The 8 days of Neirot of Chanukah. 8 days of Chanukah. Yes? It's an excellent question. They should light a menorah, and the Mikdash only had 7 lights, not 8. So there's no doubt that over time there was a merger of the two events. The Zeich on the Mikdash and then the commemoration of the Pirsum of the cruise of oil. But initially, the primary establishment of the mitzvah of lighting candles in the home has nothing to do with the cruise of oil. Initially, it was just light a candle, one candle, every single night in your house to commemorate the light of the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash. And there are halakhic issues that support the Rav's contention. I'll give you one. There is an unusual debate in the Talmud.
how to define the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. How to define the mitzvah. If I were to do survey says, and I ask you, your kid is coming home from third grade, they have an assignment, please define the mitzvah of hadlakat neirot in the Beit HaMikdash. What are you going to tell them? God said what? What did God say? To light the menorah. Good. That would be the logical thing. There is one opinion in the Gemara that the definition of hadlakat neirot is not to light the menorah. It's to place the menorah. It's an appropriate location. Lahaniach et ha-menorah. There's one opinion in the Gemara that the definition of the mitzvah is not to kindle the menorah, but to place it in its proper location. The difference would be, where can you light it? If you believe that the definition of the mitzvah is to light it, you have to light it by the door or by the window. But if the definition of the mitzvah is to place the menorah, I can walk in here, into this closet, light it in here, and carry the already lit menorah to the window and put it there. That's what the Gemara says. Either hadlaka, which everybody here believes is the right way to do it, or hanacha. So the Rav asked a simple question. What person in their right mind would define the mitzvah of lighting the menorah on Hanukkah as to place the menorah there? Every child would instinctively say, what is the definition of the mitzvah? To kindle the menorah, to light it. Not to place the already lit menorah in its proper location. Why would you even consider that as a possibility? Because there's a rampa. Listen to this man. In the text, who does it say has to light the menorah? Aharon. Here is the rampa. Anybody want to volunteer to be Aharon? No volunteers? Okay, I'll be out. Let's assume I'm out. Okay? This is the Beit HaMikdash. Here is where the menorah is supposed to be. So you'd say, I have to light it. Behalom chad, Rambam. Here is the case of the Rambam. Rambam says, I take the menorah, the Beit HaMikdash, I go outside, and in ordinary Yisrael, you light the menorah. And I, Aaron the Kohen, carry the menorah back into the Mikdash and put it in its proper location right opposite the Shulchan, which is over there. I, Aaron the Kohen, have fulfilled my mitzvah. That's the Rambam. What little bird whispered this halacha into the Rambam's ears? I don't know. But the Rambam says it black on white. So how did the Rambam define the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash? To light it or to place it? To place it. That's why, said the Rav, the Gemara in Shabbat, when it discusses Hanukkah, raises that possibility also. Why might I want to define the mitzvah of lighting the Hanukkah menorah as placing it at the window? Why would I think of that? Because it's an extension of which mitzvah? Lighting the menorah in the Mikdash. And I just told you what the Rambam said about lighting the menorah in the Mikdash. Did Aaron have to light it? No. What did Aaron have to do? Put it in the right place. Therefore, I can entertain the possibility that that is the correct definition, even for Ner Chanukah. So it establishes a link between the Ner of the Mikdash and our Nerot here. To conclude, the light which Aaron was given as the consolation prize, everybody knows what the symbol of light is. Our commitment to learn. Torah is Ner, or. So what God was telling Aaron is, the Nisim, what they do is not really responsible for the preservation of Am Yisrael. Korbanot are important, but ultimately the preservation of Am Yisrael is going to require something that is symbolized by the light, the quest for all knowledge. For all knowledge. All types of knowledge. And in fact, that Rambam that says you can light the menorah outside of the Mikdash is the basis of the Torah Umada philosophy. That's exactly Torah Umada. All of our people in our community believe there is only one place to draw light from. That's in the Mikdash, in the Beit Midrash. You dare not step outside and kindle your brain, illuminate your life, broaden your vistas by doing anything outside of the Mikdash, outside of the Beit Midrash. We believe that there is much to be gleaned properly from what's doing on the outside world. As long as you recognize where does it have to wind up? In the Mikdash. So you can carry the menorah and light it outside and be enriched by science and math and history and art and culture. As long as you put it back in the Aron, back in the Mikdash, and recognize that that contributes to our understanding of the Borei Olam. There is something to be gained there as well. So this debate, and the Ravid looked at the Rambam when he says, you can light it outside. What, are you crazy? The Kayin is going to take the menorah outside. The Rambam says, the Ravid says, where did he get this from? It's a good question. Where did he get it from? But it speaks of the Rambam's vision of how knowledge is acquired versus the Ravid's rather narrow scope, who lived in the Beis Medrash his whole life. The Ravid never studied philosophy. The Ravid never studied science and became a doctor. But the Rambam did. And from the Rambam's perspective, bringing the menorah outside and illuminating it, and then bringing that menorah lit into the Beit HaMikdash, was the perfect model for him. The perfect model, in light of what the Ramban suggests, is the Nechama for Aharon HaKohen. That light? Yes?
Just to bring it back to what we were learning.
Yes? Exactly. First day. Exactly. Beautiful. Excellent.
But then, is there a connection between the Kohen with the oil and the placing?
The mitzvah in the Mikdash has to be pure olive oil. That's true. This has nothing to do with this. All right, we'll stop here. Next of all, we'll go back to Parshas Bereishis.